Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Catola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. Now, Kim Catola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
So glad to have you listening to Cradle My Heart Radio this time around, Kim Catola, and it's time once more to welcome in a Silent No More Awareness Campaign speaker, as we do on a monthly basis here on Cradle My Heart Radio. As you probably know, so the Silent No More Awareness Campaign is a campaign whereby Christians make the public aware of the devastation that abortion brings to women and men. The campaign seeks to expose and heal the secrecy and silence surrounding the emotional and physical pain of abortion. It's an effort that's been going since 2002, and it's held gatherings, almost 1,400 gatherings in 17 countries and 48 states since its founding in the early 2000s. And over 5,000 women and men have shared their abortion testimonies at all sorts of venues. And there are over 15,000 people registered representing the campaign in 77 countries. And so it's a grassroots effort that is really making a difference. And each month, as we welcome in one of the speakers, what we do is just give an opportunity to share the story. And so today we're really pleased to welcome Melissa Hempel, who is the regional coordinator for the Silent No More Awareness Campaign for Idaho. Melissa, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
In addition to speaking and being active for this cause, Melissa is a Pregnancy Resource Center volunteer, and she's active in her local church, and she's been married for 20 years, and she's a stepmom and has lots to share about her personal story, too. And so, Melissa, I want to talk about the emphasis on the fact that you didn't really have the opportunity to make this choice yourself when you were confronted with a problem pregnancy at the age of 17. I know a little bit about your story, but tell us what happened with that as things began for you when you were 17.
Well, as it is sometimes when you're in a dysfunctional family, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever the case may be, I found that at 17, when I was a senior in high school, I discovered that I was pregnant. Of course, it was no surprise, because when you're doing what you're doing, that is the most of the time, that's the outcome. But when I told my mother that I was pregnant, there really was no choice in the matter. She immediately said that it had to be taken care of. So I went to Planned Parenthood. They made an appointment for me. This was in 1973, so it was very soon after Roe v. Wade was passed. It was in January. And I ended up in New York City and at the Planned Parenthood there, where walked in on a Sunday morning, and I can't even tell you whether the sky was gray, whether the sky was blue. I have no idea. It was dark in there. There were women. They immediately separated the men from the women. And I had a girlfriend and her boyfriend were with me, and separated them from me, and then taken back for the procedure. There was no anesthesia, and it was very painful. It was a painful physical procedure. At one point, the nurse that was in there, I reached out to grab her hand because I was in so much pain, and she backed up from me and just had this look on her face. I will never ever forget that. So when you go to places like that and you expect that you're going to get some comfort because it's supposed to be fine, it's supposed to be legal, and you have the person who you would think is supposed to give you some comfort backing away from you, that's the story right there in a nutshell.
Hmm.
But
Melissa Hempel is our guest. She's the regional coordinator for Idaho for the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. And let's talk just a little bit about that dynamic with you and your mother. This is such a common part of the story, and I think people don't understand the role that mothers play. And I want to speak to women who have teenage daughters now, who have even daughters who are not yet teenagers, and talk about the influence that mothers have. Because like you, Melissa, my mother was the primary influence for me. And like you, she was unequivocal. That's what needed to happen. And, you know, as I look back on it, I think, well, she was acting to try to protect me. She thought that was the best thing that she could do to protect my reputation and my future. And I was already launched. I was 23 years old, but I wasn't, you know, and I had a job. I had completed my education to that point. But, you know, I wasn't prepared to meet this challenge without some sort of support. And that's what she offered me by way of support. It's a little bit different when you're literally still dependent on parents, but, talk about that dynamic with your mom and how it affected things between the two of you going forward.
I realized just recently that a lot of what my mother, I don't think, was really protecting me. I think my mother was protecting my father's reputation. My dad was a pretty influential businessman in New Jersey, where we lived. And I think that she was protecting him, which I, as I said, I just realized not too terribly long ago. We never talked about it. When I came home that Sunday, my friend and I just laid on the bed, and my mother said, "Well, how was it?" I said, "Oh my gosh." And I started to tell her, and she said, "Be quiet. You don't want anybody to hear you." So that was it. We never, ever talked about it again. And it was like the elephant in the room where you brush it under the rug and you just kind of walk around it. I loved my mom. I think I just shoved it. And everything else, it manifested itself through relationships with friends and things like that. But as an adult, my mother and I did have a falling out at one point where she didn't speak to me for 2 or 3 years. So I don't know whether that was part of it or not. I never got any of her grief, if she even felt any grief. It was an interesting family dynamic because everybody was very stoic. You just don't talk about things.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a good thing. It's not a good thing at all because
right.
It doesn't teach you how to communicate how you feel. And it takes a long time to learn that if you don't learn that as a young adult.
Well, and I appreciate you saying that. I think that, again, it's a very common thing that happens in families. The secrecy that surrounds abortion protects the people who are perpetrating it and seldom helps us. And that's why I so appreciate Silent No More, giving people a chance to speak out and speak the truth. And, you know, so the story continued for you because life goes on, and later you married and became pregnant again. And what happened with that second pregnancy?
I did. And the second pregnancy ended up with an ectopic pregnancy. I was pretty far along in that pregnancy and had some problems, had some sort of bleeding, and the doctor was aware of it, and they took me in for a DNC, and when I went in and I saw that machine, I was like, oh my gosh, what are they going to do? And why I didn't stand up for myself even then because they didn't really realize, I think. So they did the DNC, and of course there was nothing there because the baby was in the tube. I had gone in for an ultrasound for a sonogram, and I saw the baby in the right tube when they put the monitor thing over. I saw it, and I said to the tech, I said, oh my gosh, there it is. He says, oh, you don't even know what you're talking about. There's nothing there. You're not even pregnant. Okay. But I was. And that was difficult because it was a direct result of the abortion 13 years prior.
And it's difficult to document that. I know that when I was writing my book, I tried to research the connection between abortion and infertility. And so talk about this a little bit for those not familiar with that. I mean, an ectopic pregnancy means that the fertilized egg doesn't travel outside of the fallopian tube, but is sort of lodged there and fails to emerge. And it can be a life-threatening situation for an ectopic pregnancy, and as I understand it, it's a common complication after abortion because there could be scar tissue. There are lots of reasons why that can happen. Tell us what you've learned as you've tried to process that experience of that ectopic pregnancy.
Well, I have learned that it is a direct result, and as you said, it is scar tissue. Now it's able to be taken care of in a couple of different ways, but I had to have major surgery. So it was quite a long healing process physically after that. But I think that for me, the emotional loss of that child was almost more, it was as difficult, if not more, than the abortion, because I knew that it was because I had had the abortion that child never had a chance to live, never had a chance at life. And that, I think, continues to be very difficult to handle, you know, to process. But I know where she is, so it is something that is not really spoken about in a lot of instances, and the other side likes to make it sound as though it's not a part of it, as though it has nothing to do with it.
Well, and it's interesting
that the abortion and I'm sorry. Mm.
Yeah, I you're right about that, absolutely. And I think the part that makes it so difficult is the denial that takes place oftentimes on the part of the medical professionals involved. Women are told, no, you weren't pregnant, or women are, you know, after the anesthesia, they don't know what happened. They're just left with questions. Or the, you know, the sense that they have, or in your case, you saw something on the ultrasound, is not validated, which, again, just makes it that much harder to let go, that much harder to process the experience.
Absolutely, yes. And I think it makes the healing a little bit more difficult. I actually asked my doctor, I said, well, was it a boy or a girl? She said, oh, it was too early to tell. But I know today that was not true. So even my doctor was not being upfront with me. I don't know what she thought. I mean, I specifically asked a question because I wanted to know. I wanted to be able to mourn that child. I wanted to know whether I was mourning my son or my daughter. And even she wouldn't tell me, which I thought was quite interesting when I thought back on that as well.
And again, sometimes medical professionals are trying to protect women. There can be lots of different motivations, and not knowing your situation, we can't, of course, comment on that, but we have to take what you're saying at face value as to how you experienced it. And I think that, you know, ectopic pregnancy is difficult in every circumstance. And it's, I guess, 1 in 60 to 1 in 80 pregnancies are ectopic. Very, very seldom do women carry a pregnancy through, because they are generally warned that it's dangerous to do so. The children very, very seldom would survive. But I think what often happens, Melissa, is that if there has been an abortion preceding an ectopic pregnancy, the self-blame becomes very, very difficult to overcome. Is that something that you experienced as you went through this?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you said it very nicely. You said it very well, but there is definitely a lot of self-blame, especially when you realize that that was the case. I mean, I knew it in my heart before I knew it from a medical standpoint. I just knew that that was the case. I had heard a story, or I had listened to, I think it was a Focus on the Family program, and I heard a gentleman say, they were talking about abortion, I guess it was during a January time when the focus is always really there, and he said, it's really sad when women abort their only child. I thought, how do you know that? But that's actually what happened with me.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, wasn't that profound that I heard that?
Melissa Hempel is our guest, and she's the regional coordinator for the Silent No More Awareness Campaign in Idaho. And she had an abortion at age 17, which really was not her choice. And I want to talk about that, Melissa, because our emotional wires get crossed so easily when it comes to abortion. I think a lot of it is because of the way that this political debate is framed around a woman's choice. And so we hold ourselves responsible with this self-blame and even carrying it forward into self-destructive behaviors and so on, when in fact we weren't really given a choice. I mean, it sounds as though your mother made a unilateral decision for you. And at age 17, it would have been extraordinary for you to have gone against that. And yet, you held yourself responsible for the consequences down the line. How did you eventually resolve that? Because it's, you know, as I say, it's an irrational emotional response that happens with us. And I know I experienced it, and I know, you know, faith alone was able to help me resolve that. That, you know, we as mothers know that we're the last line of defense in defending the life of our unborn children, even though without support and with coercion, it's extremely difficult for us to do the right thing. Talk about that face of coercion being very different than how we might think it would look when we say that coercion has happened.
Well, I often wonder why I didn't stand up for myself, because I stood up for myself with other things. I stood up for myself, you know, and for things that I believed in. I think that because I just was so frightened, I was just so shocked that I just allowed myself to go through that, to have my mother say, okay, this is what you're going to do. And I did it without any question. And I don't, am I answering your question?
Well, yeah, because,
I
mean, it's complicated, and you are, absolutely, because I think that it becomes a difficult thread for us to follow through the story. But let's talk about the healing process that you've been through, because I know that you have experienced that. How did you heal your heart and spirit from this experience?
God was amazing with me, because it was quite soon after the abortion, I was sitting in our recreation room. I was the only person in the house. And I closed my eyes, and I just poured my heart out to God. And I repented and just asked him to please forgive me for what had happened. And it was physical. He filled me with his light. The light, I could almost see the light coming out of me. It was amazing, and I knew that he had forgiven me. The hard part was forgiving myself, and he walked me through that for many, many years until I was able to find a group I was living in Washington, D.C. I found a group and went through a formal healing. It was an 8-week healing group that I think absolutely transformed my life. I realized at that point, the most freeing thing that I realized was that I had been through a trauma and that was amazing. I was like, oh, no wonder I reacted to people that way. No wonder I felt the way that I did. I wasn't crazy. I'm allowed to feel this way. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. There were two of us that went through it who were post-abortive, and with two facilitators and one young woman who was in there as a facilitator trainee. But it was an amazing, amazing experience. One that I am so glad that I did that. It was the best thing I've ever done.
Talk about the difference between spiritual healing and emotional healing. I think that, you know, a lot of times we as women try to resolve our emotional problems, and yet if we feel some relief, we know that our relationship with God may still be impacted, may still need work. I mean, did it happen in stages for you, or how did the emotions play with your spiritual awareness as you were going through your healing?
That you're exactly right, because I knew in my heart that God had forgiven me, but as I said, I was not able to emotionally walk through that forgiveness myself, and it's so important, I think, to be able to have someone who is able to sit with, to walk that walk with you. It's, you know that God is always there, but you need someone who's been through the same process, who's been through the healing, who's been through the same trauma, and to be able to help you, to be able to walk with you. And then, as they're walking with you, you're able to open up a little bit more and a little bit more. It's like a butterfly opening, you know, coming in, or a rose coming into bloom. It's just, as you open up, you're able to allow God to do more work within you and to be able to help you with that healing. Personally, do not believe that you can go through healing without the help of God. He is the one who is going to transform you. He is the one who is going to let you know without a shadow of a doubt, no matter how it is. It could be in so many different ways that He will let you know that you are completely forgiven, that you need to make this negative into a positive and walk out and start helping other women and men who have gone through this. Mm. And that's pretty much what He did with me.
Well, and I think that it's beautiful that you can describe that for us as you do. And I know that the opportunities that come along through the Silent No More awareness campaign are a big part of the healing. As you say, being able now to share the truth with others, being able to convey the hope. For those not familiar with what Silent No More awareness does, maybe you can let us know briefly. We've got about 2 minutes remaining, about any upcoming events or just generally what the format of your sharing is.
Well, here in Idaho, it's not very much, to be honest with you. Women aren't very open out here in this part of the country. I don't know what it is, but they're pretty closed. So I can relate to that. But we actually, in September, we're going to be doing the National Day of Remembrance. We're going to have a memorial service. There's a wonderful memorial that was set up by the Knights of Columbus in the Cloverdale Cemetery, and we're going to have a memorial service there. It'll actually be the first time that a memorial service has been held on the National Day of Remembrance. So I'm really, really looking forward to that, and am so blessed to be one of the leaders in that and one of the coordinators. So I would really appreciate, all of us that are doing that in September, we so would appreciate prayer that it'll be well attended, that people will understand what it is that we're doing, and just being able to go out and make it known that healing is possible, that healing is there for the asking. I think that is so important. Women just don't realize that healing is available, that it's there. And all you have to do is, you really don't have to go very far to look for it.
All right. Thank you so much, Melissa. I appreciate that. And I hope that indeed everybody will lift that event up in prayer. And we'll be talking about that more as September draws closer. If you'd like to know more about Melissa Hemphill's ministry, you can go to silentnomoreawareness.org or just visit us at cradlemyheart.org and follow the links. Thanks so much for being our guest, Melissa. God bless.
Thank you, Kim. God bless you.
Thanks so much for tuning in tonight. Now stay with us as we continue the live portion of our program, as we take a look at the top news of the week on the life issue, and welcome your phone calls too. Phones are open now, 1-800-811-3003. Join us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Hi, thank you for listening tonight, and thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you and share what's been going on with our ministry and what's been happening in the news, and have a conversation. I would love to hear from you. In fact, I need to hear from you tonight. You know, I'm on the road for some study, and this is an amazing course that is a certificate program in applied bioethics that's being offered through Oklahoma Wesleyan University. So that's right, I'm in Bartlesville, Oklahoma for the first time in my life. Flew into Tulsa today, and our studies begin in a very intensive two-week period over the next couple of weeks. So pray for my stamina, because I'm feeling a little bit challenged tonight. And things are a little bit different on the way we've got the broadcast configured. So pray for our technology and everything else that we need in the next 2 weeks to be able to deliver the great programs that our team puts together for you week in and week out. This program is one of the most challenging things that I have ever studied. You know, I realized as I was preparing for the homework and preparing for the study that one of the things they're asking us to do is to keep a file of stories relating to the pro-life apologetic, how to make your case for defending the life of the unborn, how to make your case for healing after abortion, how to make your case and not have it just be an emotional appeal, not have it be a blind faith appeal based simply on my religious beliefs as a Christian, which are not blind faith, by the way, but if you're not prepared to adequately articulate the faith, you're subject to that charge, and people can try to dismiss you on that basis. Anyway, we're all sharpening our axes here and getting ready to sit under the teaching of Scott Klusendorf and Mark Newman, and these are some pretty tall timber in the world of pro-life communications and teaching. And Scott has been a guest on this program. Hope to bring you Mark Newman in the future, too. And, you know, it's not just an academic exercise. I had a conversation over the last couple of weeks with a family member who is pro-choice. And, you know, this person's views are evolving. And I would say a lot of progress toward a more friendly to the pro-life worldview position for this person, but the stumbling block is when the fetus acquires the characteristics that could confer personhood upon it and upon him or her, because to me, of course, it's a human and it's a person. From conception, as soon as you become human, you attain to all the characteristics of what of the thing that you are, which is a human. Anyway, I wasn't completely prepared for that conversation, but I hope I get another chance soon. And so I do appreciate your prayers that God would open my mind and help me to take it all in, because I'm really being stretched intellectually in this particular week. And, you know, this matters for other reasons, too, because our faith is being played out in the public square, isn't it? We put something on Facebook this week, and if you're not getting our stories in your news feed, just go to Cradle My Heart, facebook.com/CradleMyHeart, and you'll be able to see what we're posting and talking about every week. And this week, one of the stories was Jimmy Carter, who was on for an interview concerning his memoir. He's 90, and it's A Full Life, the title of the memoir. So he was talking with the reporter about various things, and the way the reporter asked the question to me was very fascinating. The reporter said, do you have a problem with gay marriage? He said, I never had a problem with it. Anybody can marry whoever they want to marry. He said, but then he interjected without being asked by the host, Jimmy Carter, former President Carter, said, but I do have a problem with abortion. I've had a problem with abortion for a long time. And he said, I don't think, for instance, it's something that Jesus would support, unless you're talking about rape or incest or the health of the mother being in danger. And the reporter just kept on his original question, but and in fact doubled down on it and said, well, would Jesus approve of gay marriage? And I felt bad for the former president. I really did, because his answer was, I think he would approve. And then he paused and he said, I don't have a verse. And for someone who just discussed being a Sunday school teacher, to speak on behalf of what Jesus would and would not approve and to have no basis for it in the scripture, to me was embarrassing. I really did. I felt bad for him. And of course, we know what the verses are from the heart of Jesus Christ himself, saying that marriage is man and a woman. And it just was really an unfortunate thing. But beyond that, when we get back to our issue of would Jesus support abortion in the case of a woman who had been raped, I don't think you can find any basis in Scripture for that point of view. But maybe you read it differently. What do you think? 800-811-3003. Former President Carter says that he's against abortion, and he doesn't think Jesus would approve of it. Great. Awesome. That a person of his stature would interject that into a news interview is very encouraging. Until he went on to say, Jesus would support abortion in the cases of rape and incest. I don't see it. What do you think? 800-811-3003 is our number. It's a toll-free call here at Cradle My Heart Radio, 1-800-811-3003. And here's the reason why I don't see it. If Jesus were asked about a woman who was raped, and then what needed to happen, was asked what needed to happen next, I think, like all people of compassion, because he was a person of incredible compassion, he would first talk about what she needed, you know, in the short term, how she needed to be upheld and how she needed to be comforted and how she needed to be cared for with medical attention, of course, and how she needed understanding and how she needed to be surrounded and protected. And he might even talk about how she needed to be avenged by people who are charged with upholding the law. All of these things, I think, we can see fitting in with the character of Christ. But why would Jesus take a political stand about rape and incest? Because aren't those exceptions politics? 800-811-3003 is our number. Help me out with this. I have never had that devastating experience, and so I would never presume to say I understand how a woman feels after she's been raped. But the rape doesn't change the innocence of the child and its essential human nature, and thus its essential human rights. What do you think? 800-811-3003 is our number, 1-800-811-3003. If you didn't see that interview with former President Carter, we've got it on cradlemyheart.org, the pertinent part. It was a half-hour interview and fascinating to hear him speak. And I pay him all due respect for his life of public service, not only, of course, in government and with the military for his Navy service, but as he continues to teach Sunday school, week in and week out. That's an amazing commitment, isn't it? And people, he said, do show up to see the politician teaching the Bible hundreds every week. And, you know, more power to him on that. But I'd love to hear your opinion about what he said on this question of abortion. 1-800-811-3003. Some other news stories that we're covering this week, too. And this one is even deeper waters that we are wading into, because some are saying now that they feel that perhaps the silver lining for Christians who are conservative in their politics and feel that it's a grave travesty that the Supreme Court ruled that homosexuals can marry. Some are saying the silver lining in that decision, in the wording of it, is that it could allow for abortion to be banned. Have you been reading these opinions? Some say already, some have already dismissed that idea. But if you're up to speed and can help us understand that and put that into bite-sized nuggets to help people who are not following the story as closely as you might be, would love to hear your thoughts. At 1-800-811-3003. Our phones are open tonight. 1-800-811-3003. I'm Kim Cotola. I'm your host. As I mentioned, we're on the road tonight in Oklahoma, getting ready to do some intensive study on applied bioethics. We'll be in our classroom time grappling with the question of what makes a human being a human being, and what is the unborn, and how deeply do we have to take the complexities beyond those questions? 800-811-3003. I haven't learned nearly enough to be able to answer the questions for you tonight, but if you want to talk about bioethics, we could talk about that too. 1-800-811-3003. The curriculum for the program has just been outstanding, and my mind has really grown through reading Greg Kokel's book on tactics, through reading Peter Kreef's book on the unaborted Socrates, and our instructor's book, Scott Klusendorf's A Case for Life. That book is one I can highly recommend to you as something that will help you grasp the arguments in a reading. The other that I think has been so helpful is Why Pro-Life by Randy Alcorn, but Scott Klusendorf goes much more deeply into the philosophical as well as the theological and moral questions around bioethics and life, cloning, embryonic stem cell research. These questions we hear in the news and we think, I really can't grasp that. It's kind of above my pay grade. No, we can do it. You and I together, and I'm going to do my best to break it down for you as I learn it. Keep you informed as I go. All right, let's take a short break and give you a chance to get to the phones, talk about Jimmy Carter, talk about bioethics, talk about maybe something you want to respond to, something that our guest said as Melissa shared her story from the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. Join us. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 1-800-811-3003. Call us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight. I'm Kim Cattola, and this is Cradle My Heart Radio. Oh, boy, I hope you can join us next week. Cynthia Rukti will be our guest, talking about a beautiful message that she has on being tattered and mended. After abortion, so many people I've counseled with have said, I would do anything to be able to go back and undo that day. But God has something much bigger in mind for us to make us better than before. It's an incredible message, and I know that one that will bless you. So be sure and put Cradle My Heart Radio on your calendar every week, but be sure not to miss us next week with Cynthia Rukti, our guest. Let's go to the phones now, and Celeste is joining us. Celeste, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. You wanted to say comment about the remarks from former President Jimmy Carter on rape.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, first I want to say, I just feel bad for anyone that did get raped and, you know, had a baby or whatever. And I just want to say that because from what I heard in my story, my mom, she was a rape baby. And when my grandmother had her, I know it was kind of devastating, but at the same time, my mom had three boys, and all of us came to Christ in like 5 years ago. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing because I know that God can take whatever was meant for bad, he'll turn it for the good. So it may seem bad and it may be painful and hurtful, but God works in pain. And from my story, I'm a one-night stand, baby, so it's like, I know God can do amazing things, so that ate me up for life, like a long time. And then when I came to Christ, I let it all go because I'm free now.
Wow, wow! You know, I have goosebumps and tears sprung to my eyes when you talked about your mom having three kids. And you know, I wanna underline this, Celeste, because one of the guests that we had on in the past, Rebecca Kiesling, said her mother was raped. And abortion wasn't legal. And so, you know, the state forced her to give birth to that baby. She said she didn't want to. She said, I wasn't born because I was wanted. I was born because I was protected. And it sounds like maybe the same thing might have been true for your grandmother, although I don't know. You know, so, I mean, people assume that women are going to have a reaction. But tell me about the family story that you know of, you know, with your grandmother, of how she reacted to this and how she decided to carry that pregnancy forward.
As I know, is that her and my mom, they growing closer now. They had like a kind of a bad relationship because of that at first. But my grandmother, she still took care of my mom, still looked after her. And actually, too, I met my granddad. He just passed away. And he came back and he apologized to everybody. Because he had gave himself to Christ, and that's what kind of rubbed off on me because I was, at first, you know how you want to hold unforgiveness on a person for them not being there or for the incident that did happen in the past or whatever, but it seemed that God was working in the midst of that, and I was nowhere near Christ at the time, but Christ was always near me, and yeah, that's just all I know for the story right now. I know that he asked for forgiveness and everybody forgave him. We grew closer with him before he passed. And I just thank God for that because I always wanted to know a father figure in my life. And I got to spend a little time with my granddad, not too much, but I got to spend enough time with him to get to know who he is. Before he passed away, especially since he came to Christ before he died.
Wow, Celeste, you're just blessing us with this story. I can't, but what a witness. So was it your grandmother's faith that you think flowed out to everybody in your family? How do you account for it?
I just say that I know situations happen like that, and it's reality. And, you know, God don't intend for it to happen that way, but it's life, and it's me. We got our own free will. So we get to make our own decisions. It's nothing that God can just stop us from doing. He can try to persuade us not to do it, but it's our choice. But at the same time, you know, God forgiveness for anybody. And that's why Christ died, because he died and took the whole world's sins, not just a few sins, but all sins. And just to comment, too, on John Carter,
mm-hmm.
I just pray for him, because that a statement like that, to say that Christ approves a homosexual marriage, that's big coming out of a position like you was once president, and you say you're a Christian. And it's like, if you read the word just, it tells you all over that God made marriage for man and woman. And
I think you're right. We do need to pray for him, because even as he said it, he admitted he had no basis for saying it, other than, I guess, trying to please people, trying to be compassionate in his flesh toward people. But you're right. We need to expect something more, don't we?
Yeah, because that's a chance to witness to the whole world about who is Christ and the love of God that he has. Because I know from my story and my family story, how God just been working in our life. And I just thank God for it, because if he hadn't woken us up, we'd still be in turmoil. Like, we still go through things as Christians, but the grace of God is just so powerful that it's like, no matter what you go through, it's like a Job situation, that you still got God to hold on to and that hope. So I'm just praying for any mother that was raped and have a baby and kind of regretting that she did get an abortion, or a mother that carried on and still had the baby and it still bothers her. I pray for them, because I don't know their pain, but I can kind of witness to it about what it is that they're kind of going through. And the same thing for any person that's a one-night stand, baby. Like, I feel that, I know that God has a purpose for you, because I found purpose in God, and I know if he did it for me, he can do it for anybody.
Well, Celeste, thank you so much for sharing your heart, and I pray that with the passing of your grandfather, that God will provide a strong father figure that you deserve. Thank you so much, but thank you for being a strong man of God, because that you are. I appreciate your call very much tonight. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for having me. God bless.
God bless you, too. This is Cradle My Heart Radio, and wow, I just, sometimes you just want to stop and just, Selah, as the Psalms say, and let everything that Celeste said sink in. I can't tell you the number of women that I have talked with who said, I don't even know who the father of the baby was that I aborted, because it was a one-night stand. I've had women tell me that they passed out because they drank too much, and they were in a season of blackouts in their lives because of alcoholism. So they have no idea of the circumstances of becoming pregnant. And then when the decision to abort came through, they understood that they were failing morally to live up to the moral obligation they had to the child, regardless of the circumstances of the conception. And when you listen to a young man like Celeste, who is a child of God now, as a believer in Jesus Christ, you want to talk about the value of a life. What is the value of his life today? And I'm telling you, it was the same value. Before he came to Christ, it was the same value from his conception in God's mind. What a beautiful witness. Well, thank you again for listening tonight. You go to cradlemyheart.org, and you can leave a comment there for us, and you can also send in an email question. We're going to deal with some of your questions in the live portion of the program next week. We'll talk about a woman who knows that her marital problems have to do with fathering difficulties because her husband was not supportive of the abortion decision she made in the marriage. We'll find some answers for her and hopefully for the questions on your heart, too. CradleMyHeart.org. Please be sure and join us next week. And remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on myfaithradio.com.